8. Marcus walked across the street, rain pouring off his umbrella. This sucks. It was a miserable morning, doubled in its effects by our moods. We'd scoured the street for an hour already, finding no discernible markings or hints of the token's location. The coordinates are only an approximation, plus these buildings are renovated. It could have been moved during a remodel, Tripp said, kicking at a bike fence. We were half a block from a cafe, and the smells of espresso and breakfast pastries wafted over despite the downpour. Maybe we should go inside, regroup, he suggested. Fine by me, Marcus said. He walked quickly, his soggy shoes squelching with each step. I started after them and checked to see if Veronica was following. You coming? The rain fell harder, battering my clear umbrella, and a gust of wind nearly tore it from my grip. Veronica! I shouted, but she didn't acknowledge me. I stopped at her side, trying to see what she was staring at. Water drifted across the one-way street, and I reached for her as a car drove by, not slowing as it splashed us, soaking me from head to toe. What a jerk! Rain rolled down Veronica's face, and she smiled despite being bathed in water. I think I know where it is. The token? Where? I asked. Her finger pointed to the sewer drain along the sidewalk. In the sewers? Why not? The coordinates show the position, not the depth. She beamed at the revelation, and I pulled her into a hug. Someone honked at us, and I grabbed her hand, directing her to the sidewalk. You did it! Now we just need to figure out how we access them. The cafe was a warm respite from the morning storm, and we joined Marcus and Tripp in a booth closest to the kitchen. Their jackets dripped on the floor, hung from another table's chairs, and we added ours to the pile. I say we asked to speak to the building manager. They might have... Tripp stopped it as he looked up at us. What has you so happy? Veronica thinks the token is in the sewers, I said.
And that makes you pleased?
Marcus asked.
Way I see it, we can't go into the sewers in the middle of a rainstorm, not to mention in the heart of a city like Paris. There has to be some...
Bring up the map, see what can be done, I told Marcus, and he took out his computer. I headed to the till, ordering 4 hot drinks and an assortment of pastries. By the time I returned, Marcus's expression was grave.
The sewer is there, but...
But what? I asked, sliding the tray to the center of the table.
Have you ever heard of the catacombs?
Sure. The Catacombes de Paris, pretty famous tourist spot, I said. My mother hadn't allowed us to visit them on our trip despite my incessant begging. They're intricate, with tunnels and caverns spreading out under the city. Many are unmarked and blocked off from public use, but they're down there. I plopped into the seat beside Marcus and saw the map of known tunnels with the city map overlapping.
And you're suggesting there's a section of the catacombs underneath our coordinates?
Tripp sat across from us with his hands wrapped around the warmth of a coffee cup.
It appears so, but it's not part of the publicized network, Marcus said. How do we access it?
Veronica asked. No clue.
I doubt that kind of information is easily available online.
Marcus began to search, but there was a glint of curiosity in Veronica's eyes. I could see the wheels spinning. What is it? She blew on her drink, sipping it before responding.
One of my clients mentioned coming to Paris. He hired some locals to escort him into the catacombs. He filmed the whole thing. I guess there's like a whole world under Paris. They once found a cavern with a bar and movie theater in an abandoned region. It's also super dangerous.
Collapses? It was something we were used to in the archaeology field. Everything was always underground, and years of weather and water tended to make things unsteady.
Those are a possibility, but also people. My client was fine, though, and he had a great time.
Can you speak to him, see where he obtained the tour guide? I asked.
Hunter said no outside contact,
Tripp barked.
He also wants the token, doesn't he? I'll send him a message.
Veronica's phone was in her hand a split second later, her fingers moving quickly over the screen.
Done.
I didn't like the idea of waiting around. Now what? Her phone beeped.
These kids love texting.
She tapped it and read the message while we all waited impatiently.
What does it say?
Tripp asked.
I guess they call them cataphiles, people who enter illegally and hold parties or just graffiti inside the caverns. He met one at a nightclub, a place called Charme.
Nightclub? We don't have that kind of time, I said, not thrilled with delaying this mission any longer.
Unless you have a better plan, we head to Charme and ask for Juliette tonight.
And if she's not there?
Tripp asked.
Then we find another way.
The music was far too loud, and I felt like one of the oldest people there. The truth was, even as a college student, I'd hated going to late-night bars. I'd always preferred the quiet, comfortable, pub-style establishments, with the sound of pool balls clacking and darts being thrown into colorful boards. Marcus walked with a cocky gait, and Tripp loomed behind me like a stone wall. His gaze darted around, and I was almost surprised the big man at the doors let us in at all. Veronica had mentioned her wealthy client, and the man softened, opening the velvet rope for us. The joint was packed, and I guessed most of the young people were done with school for the semester. Or maybe it was always like this, in the heart of Paris at midnight. Kids with glowing makeup pressed past me, aiming for the dance floor, and I searched for a place to talk to a bartender. I noticed a bar behind a growing line of patrons and moved for it. "Voulez m'excuser, urgence," I lied to them, pretending to have an emergency, and a few people let me by until I was at the front of the line. The bar was busy, and two men prepared complicated drinks with a kind of casual ease that told me they weren't in a hurry to get things done. I spoke in French and waved the closest bartender down.
"What'll it be?"
he asked without making eye contact.
"I'm looking for a girl, Juliette. You know her?" "I know a lot of girls, and a few Juliettes."
I reached into my pocket and slipped out 50 euros. I passed it to him across the bar, and he finally glanced up, the bill disappearing as quickly as it came. He didn't say another word, just pointed to the stair leading above the bar. I nodded and saw Veronica near the dance floor.
"I think I found her," I shouted,
and she came along, leaving Tripp with Marcus. The pumping music got quieter as we ascended the stairs, and a group of 20-year-olds hung out on a few leather couches, a bottle of liquor centering the table and a lot of empty shot glasses sprawled out. I walked up to them, scanning the group, but it was Veronica who seemed to know how to introduce herself. She changed her entire persona, her hips moving to one side, her foot stance shifting.
"Juliette?"
she asked, her voice light and airy. A couple of guys glanced at a purple-haired pixie cut, and we had our target. I spoke French again.
"Juliette, we'd like to discuss something with you."
She slinked away from the men, moving from the couches.
"Are you American?"
Her voice was throaty, her English fairly smooth. I caught the eye of one of the guys, and he frowned at me before returning to his quiet conversation.
"We are. We're looking for a guide,"
Veronica answered.
"Are you?" "I don't do that kind of thing anymore,"
she said, and turned her back on us.
"Wait, Juliette, we'll pay,"
I said, loud enough for her to hear me over the music blasting below us. She paused.
"I have money."
Veronica had already asked her contact what he'd paid Juliette for the tour, and it was substantially less than what we were about to offer.
3,000 euros.
She stiffened, and even though she was facing the other direction, I could sense the smile building on her face. Before I had to do any more convincing, she spun on her Converse heel, jutting her hand out.
"Deal."
The streets were almost silent, or as quiet as they could be in a city like Paris. No matter the hour, there would always be the ringing of a distant siren carrying across the vacated cobblestone roadways. We'd explained our destination to Juliette and demanded she stay off her phone for the duration of the journey, which she'd hesitantly accepted. Tripp held onto her phone, and I was almost surprised someone would concede the lifeline and walk into the underground with four strangers like this, but our guide seemed unperturbed by any of it. I suspected Veronica's presence gave us a credibility we wouldn't have had otherwise, and I was once again glad for her company on the team.
"We cannot enter near the destination, but I think we can find it below,"
she assured us in English. The area was rougher here, and I was happy the rain had ceased as we strolled down the road, hugging the old stone building's wall as we crept to the church. It stood like a Gothic monster in the night. I had no illusions that the building wasn't spectacular in the sunlight, but everything turned sinister as the dark night sky cast its shadow across Paris. Footsteps in an alley drew my attention, and I hurried forward as I saw a man shuffling toward us. He mumbled in French, and we continued with Tripp in the rear, covering us. The streetlights were few and far between as we wound around the church, and finally, we broke from the protection of the narrow street into a courtyard. A statue rose from the ground, a plaque attached, probably describing the saint's significance and what year it had been erected. The church had a central spire with two more rounded on either side. The symmetry was beautiful, and even well past midnight, there were lights emerging from the front doors. Tires squealed behind us, and a black car skidded to a halt at a red light. It was the only vehicle on the street, and it drove off in a hurry when the lights changed. The entire operation was filled with tension, which was why I preferred to do these things in the daytime. But Juliet claimed there would be no eyes on us as we entered the catacomb tunnels from beneath this church. We took her word for it and walked as a group around the courtyard to the rear of the building. I spotted a man smoking near a side entrance, his foot planted to hold the door open, and the burning cigarette spun from his hand, hissing in a puddle of water. Then he was gone. The back of the church was nearly as well maintained as the front, and Juliet moved with grace for a secondary building. The doors were high and metallic, gates with a chain and padlock wrapped around the handles.
"How do we get inside?"
Marcus asked as he tested the gate. The chains rattled loudly. Juliet shook her head in annoyance and slid bolt cutters from her pink backpack. She winked at him as the padlock fell into her palm.
"Leave it to the pros."
And we were in. "What is this place?"
"Lots of the old churches had crypts hundreds of years ago. Don't mind the bodies,"
she said with a grin, and we began to descend wide stone stairs. The air cooled the lower we went, and the floor leveled out. The walls were dark gray, and the main room was lined with a series of carved stone pillars reaching up to a domed ceiling. Juliet didn't leave us time to explore as she hurried across the floor, ignoring the heavy blocks that would be stone coffins. Some of them had markings, carvings at the fronts. Others had effigies sculpted on top of their casket lids.
"This place is creepy,"
Marcus said softly, making our guide laugh.
"If this scares you, you might want to stay above ground,"
she said. The room ended, and we walked through an arched doorway, which took us down another flight of steps. We repeated this process a few more times, and I noticed how Marcus stayed in the middle of the pack as we went. Tripp and I held flashlights, and Juliet kept hers on as she finally stopped.
"This is where the crypt exits into the tunnels. There are a handful of skeletons, but we'll pass a major burial site eventually. Should be able to cross over to your location shortly after."
"Skeletons,"
Marcus whispered. We exited the relative safety of the church grounds, and I instantly felt a chill. The ground was dirt, the walls narrow and confining. I touched the passageway, remembering the images I'd seen of the catacombs, with skulls and bones rising from the floor to ceiling. This was a different area, clearly, because it was nothing but stone and dirt.
"Which way?"
Tripp asked, shining his flashlight left, then right. Juliet walked past him, leading right.
"Follow me."
Veronica caught my arm, and I waited while Marcus and Tripp continued.
"Do you think we'll find it?"
"The token?" She nodded.
"Yes, I do,"
I told her.
"Not this one, I mean the sixth,"
she whispered. The rest of our group was gaining distance, and I didn't like the idea of lagging behind in the catacombs. Time will tell, but I think we have a shot.
"How?
If we don't have the coordinates, it seems to me Hunter has some serious detection systems in place. He found one of the tokens from some movie producer's online photos. If the last token is out there, he'll make sure we track it." My flashlight flickered, and I banged it against my palm. The beam shone brighter. I tried to be positive about it.
"Either way, you get paid, right?"
"Will it matter if these objects are coming to destroy us?"
Veronica asked.
"I guess you're right."
I didn't want to think about that, not with so much riding on what happened in the next hour or two. It was musky, and I found myself struggling to make a clean inhale. The corridors changed, the ground growing more even, the wall texture smoothing as we rounded a bend, and I saw our first skull. It was on the floor, fallen from its position. Marcus crouched near it, poking his finger into the eye socket. He fell back as a rat the size of a raccoon emerged from the jaw, scurrying across our path.
"What the hell?"
Marcus shouted.
"As if a skull wasn't bad enough?"
He bounded up, dusting his pants off. There were dozens more, the walls stacked high with various bones.
"Whoever did this had to have long-lasting psychological effects."
"They didn't have a choice. The city's cemeteries were too full, and storms were threatening the city's structure. The only way to ensure Paris didn't sink into the earth was to support it and bring the skeletal remains underground."
Juliet's voice was haunting. Her eyes seemed yellow in this light, almost like a wolf caught, staring from the forest. I gawked at the remains, trying to imagine that these had once been people like me. They'd had lives and families. They'd loved and felt pain. Now they were bricks in a wall.
"It's not far," Juliet said.
Tripp grunted, taking the lead in front of the rest of us. The corridors narrowed again, and we had to duck, repeatedly. A handful of bones scattered here and there.
"Is this public?" I asked our guide.
"Not here. There's another tunnel this connects to. Right now we're running parallel with it until it joins in a type of hub. Only we are lower, so it's easy to evade any patrols."
"Do they really patrol it?" Tripp reached into his jacket, and for the first time tonight I wondered if he was packing. We had gone back to the hotel after the nightclub, and he'd spent a few minutes in the suite.
"Mostly investigate reports. Don't worry, this corridor isn't on their list," she said with confidence.
Her steps were light and her pace had picked up. Did she want to get this over with, or was it something else? I checked the GPS and saw we were half a mile away from the token's predicted location. We passed a half dozen doorways along this confined corridor, and Juliet slowed at each, almost as if she was expecting a skeleton to pop out and scare her.
"Does anyone ever go missing?"
Marcus asked, breaking the silence.
"All the time,"
Juliet said.
"Why else do you think people call the place the Gates to Hell?"
"I don't know, maybe because of the millions of skeletons,"
Marcus muttered. I held my GPS and saw we were shifting in the opposite direction to our target. I said as much to Juliet, but she only grinned at me as my flashlight cast over her.
"There is no such thing as a direct route in the catacombs."
I don't know who noticed first. I saw the shadows lift from the wall, falling just short of my beam as Juliet slowed. Then I heard the voices, laughter, a man speaking French, and the cigarette smell.
"What the hell have you done?"
Tripp asked, and Juliet shrugged. Footsteps echoed from the corridor behind us, and I turned around, shining my light in that direction. Two men approached, the ones she'd been with at the nightclub. Veronica was at my side, Marcus near Tripp, forming a circle.
"You're not really Juliet, are you?" I asked, feeling a fool for ever trusting the bartender and her word for it.
"Juliet is gone, but she'd be amazed at how many people show up at Charm, seeking her out,"
the imposter said. Her accent miraculously vanished, and I heard a hint of Dublin in her tone. A hulking bald man with a leather jacket appeared from the direction ahead of us, a cigarette still in his lips. A short woman with close-cropped hair and a neck tattoo stood defiantly near him, her gaze flicking between the four of us.
"What do you want?" I asked, trying to keep control of my voice.
"Usually your money, but I have a feeling there's another reason you've come. Maybe a treasure? Maybe a missing person? And if you're willing to give me 3,000 euros for a simple tour, you must have a friend with deep pockets,"
Juliet said.
"You're mistaken. We just need to—"
I silenced Veronica by setting a hand on her arm. "We may as well tell them the truth. I didn't want this to turn violent." Tripp looked relaxed, and he hadn't spoken yet. This told me he was eager for action. He was probably harnessing his strength, ready to spring, like a coiled snake. "We've been hired by a movie company to scout a location for a new flick. The government is dropping all kinds of red tape, and it was suggested this destination might be a safe spot to film a few scenes." Juliet stepped back, her head tilting slightly as she listened. "There could be more than 10,000 in it for you if you think you could get us in for at least 3 days without being seen. We'll have some gear. Maybe these fine people can help us carry it," I said, standing taller and adding in my cultured accent, trying to convey affluence and importance. One of the guys behind me pulled a knife and mumbled something in French.
"Raconteur de salades."
He didn't believe us. We'd given Juliet half the payment already, and the rest was inside my jacket pocket. She'd seen it, and she walked forward, her sneakers quiet on the stone floor. She smiled at me and shoved her hand into my jacket, pulling the bills out. She handed them to the other woman, and leather coat pulled a gun. I barely saw Tripp move. He rushed away and his arm flung out, striking the bulky man in the face. He spun, elbowing the guy's gut, making him keel over. The man with the knife lunged in, and I bolted at him, shoving him aside. Marcus was in his path, and the blade sliced my friend. who staggered back, striking the wall, knocking bones loose. Veronica was already moving, grabbing hold of Juliette. The girl was slight, but she was fast. Her arm cracked against Veronica's face, and everyone halted at the sound of a gun firing. Tripp held the big man's gun and pointed it at the ceiling and motioned at Juliette, then the guy who'd cut Marcus. "Drop the knife." When nothing happened, Tripp aimed the gun at the perpetrator. "Drop the weapon." His voice boomed in the corridor, falling flat against the dense space. The blade fell to the ground and I went for it, picking it up. The handle was warm and damp with sweat. "What do we do with them?" I asked. The five thieves were in a line with the four of us facing their group.
"I know what I'd like to do with them. Think anyone would miss these pieces of crap?"
Tripp asked. "We're not killing them," I told him.
"Are there more of you hiding down here?"
Tripp asked them. Marcus held his arm to his chest, his eyes closed.
"You okay?"
I whispered.
"Yeah, just a scrape, nothing serious,"
he replied, and I nodded gratefully.
"It's only us,"
Juliet assured Tripp. She stared at the gun.
"What would have happened if we didn't pay you? How many bodies have you dragged and stowed in these tunnels?"
Tripp stepped closer and she pressed against a pile of bones.
"None. We don't kill anyone. We scare them."
"Here's what'll happen. Your friends are going to scatter and you'll bring us in as promised. Then you'll leave and all five of you will forget you ever saw us. Understood?"
Tripp kept his voice level. Juliet didn't move. Tripp fired the gun, a skull exploding from the impact. Juliet screamed and slammed her hands to her ears. The big guy started forward, but Tripp quickly aimed at him.
"I'm not messing around. My boss tells me to leave you alive, and I'll do it, assuming you don't test my patience."
I almost smirked at him referring to me as his boss, but not quite. Things were still extremely tense in the catacombs corridor.
"Oui."
The guy who brandished the knife was the first to depart. The other two men were right after, and the girl shrugged and apologized as she took off, leaving Juliet the only one of their gang left.
"Nice friends. They were quick to abandon you,"
Tripp muttered.
"Come on, take us the rest of the way, and you'll live to see another sunrise."
It turned out we were only a 20-minute walk from the GPS coordinates Luis had left on the inside of the Caracas airport locker. Juliet clearly understood the layout of the catacombs, and we lowered another two flights of stairs, crossing under a bridge overhead before the path ended. Marcus's knife wound appeared to be superficial, and we tore a piece of Tripp's shirt off, tying it around his forearm.
"Is this a joke? Another deceit?"
Tripp asked her, the gun ever present in his grip.
"No. The corridors have secret passageways,"
she said, appearing to vanish. As I advanced closer, I saw the illusion for what it was. The wall looked the same as the opening, and we entered another hall. This one was colder yet, with water streaming from the ceiling. I thought about the street we'd been at in the early hours of this day with the constant rainfall. This would be directly below that location, but perhaps a few stories under. There were no skeletons here, just mud and slippery rocks and rats. I wondered what Luis had thought as he strode these hallways 30-something years ago, trying to hide one of the tokens. Had he seen my father using the bridge? Was that why he was so adamant on burying them?
"Juliette, you were never here. Got it?"
I asked. She glanced at Tripp and then to the gun.
"Lots of places to hide a body, pal. We don't have to let her go,"
Tripp said, and I hoped he was only trying to scare the woman.
"I won't tell anyone. I have no reason to. You might want to rethink your choices and friends and maybe select a new career path,"
Veronica said. The other woman had already run off with the second half of her payment, and I decided this scammer might consider it hush money.
"Take the cash and leave,"
I ordered her. She didn't need to be told twice, and I watched her dart through the doorway, hearing her shoes rush across the stone floor. "Marcus, you tracking our path?" I asked, and my sidekick nodded as he pulled out his phone with his uninjured arm.
"Got it here. We're good to escape."
"That just leaves the reason for this whole mess."
Tripp shoved the gun into his belt and we proceeded forward.
"I'm impressed," I told him.
"What, back there? It was nothing."
"If you say so." I peered to the walls, then the ceiling, searching for any markings.
And there it was. A jaguar claw, like the symbols under the causeway at El Mirador.
It was carved into the bumpy partition, pieces of dark stone chipped away to form the emblem. Water dripped over it, and I followed the flow, finding it creeping behind a stack of skull-sized stones. "Give me a hand with these." Marcus bent over and, despite the cut, used both hands as we attempted to relocate the pile, which appeared to be supporting the wall. Structurally, I doubted it was, and imagined Luis here rolling the stones into a neat line, then placing more on top. It looked purposeful. With all four of us on the case, the removal was quick, and soon the dirty sack's corner stuck up from the mud. Without a second thought, I dug with my bare hands, freeing the bag. I grinned at the others, Tripp's flashlight illuminating the sack as it spun in my grip. I passed it to Veronica, and with a flick of my blade, I cut the bottom out, letting the token fall into my palm, a half moon over a spoon shape.
"Let's leave,"
Veronica whispered. They exited the room and I waited, using a rock to bash the etching Luis had carved from existence. When the claw was gone, I grabbed the flashlight on the floor and splashed after my team. The third token was in my pocket.